Well, hello, Marriage Conference 2025. We are finishing up with our Q&A questions that we weren't able to get to on Saturday, and just wanted to dive into a few of those that were remaining so that we could maybe answer a few questions that you might have asked and not had answered. So I'm just going to read through a few of these and give you some feedback that I think might be beneficial and helpful. And so we'll start with the first one here. Says this: what do you do to keep your marriage fun and lively? And you're probably just looking for some suggestions, it seems like, but really, if you're going to keep your marriage fun and lively, it really is going to require intentionality. It's not the place for just only spontaneity or when you feel like it, although spontaneity is a good piece of it. But I know there's certain things that my wife likes. She likes me to just show up places that she's at without me telling her. And that's, you know, obviously specific to her, but she just finds that to be fun, that I would, you know, quote unquote, track her down and just show up to say hi, whether I was out running errands or just wanted to stop in. And so there's just little things you can do to keep your marriage fun. And, you know, a lot of things you've heard before, but, you know, plan a date that's different, that's fun, that's, you know, maybe an hour or two drive away. You know, we like to drive down to the Tri-Cities. There's good food down there. The weather's usually warmer. You know, it's gas, but it's different. We get to talk on the way there and back and, you know, see some things we haven't seen. And, it's just fun. So I think you gotta just try some things to keep things fun and lively. And, you know, not all of them are going to be home runs, but I think the effort that you put forth into just connecting with each other really goes a long way, and it gets you out of the routine of work and kids and house and just on repeat, and just to do something different. And you know, we live in a beautiful place. Try a camping trip, just the two of you. I don't know, just find a tent, grab some sleeping bags, just go spend the night somewhere. It'd be fun. Just do something different. So it's really up to you and what you're liking to do. But the idea is that you think about it and you try some stuff. And I think the trying is fun too. So hopefully that helps. Somebody asking for encouragement for a spouse not feeling desired or connected with or pursued. I know, lean into God and work on yourself, but it is so lonely. You know, just by the phrasing of that, I'm assuming that this is a wife asking the question, not feeling connected, pursued. I could have that wrong, but just to answer from the wife's perspective, you know, really, you're finding a way to, you know, be desired and to be someone that wants, you know, that someone wants to connect with or pursue. And so, I would say, just from the wife's perspective, what are you doing to be desirable, to be someone that wants, you know, he wants to connect with or wants to pursue? What are you working on with you, and what efforts are you making kind of in that regard where he notices? And I mean, you can try all kinds of different things, but I think just the effort can go a long ways. And you know, again, back to communication piece, you really got to have these conversations of you know, maybe with some quote unquote ammo in your belt to say, you know, I've tried some things, you know, come to your spouse and say, I've tried some things, I've done some things, it doesn't seem to be making a connection. What can I do that would cause you to see me? What could I do that would cause you to want to connect with me and want to pursue me? What could I do? And maybe there's some suggestions there. Another piece of that, just from the guy side, is, you know, sometimes in our culture, guys lack connection because they're putting their attention elsewhere, and that could be movies, video games, too much work. Unfortunately, pornography definitely plays a role in a lot of men's lives, unfortunately, but that's something that can be corrected. And wives, I don't think there's any problem with asking your husband what he's doing in regard to pornography and protecting himself from that. And if there's an issue, then let's get it corrected and fixed and back on track. And you know, that could also help with the connection and the pursuing. If I misread it and it's a guy asking that question, wanting to feel desired, connected, or pursued, you know, again, being the most godly man and the leader that God created you to be is something that certainly turns the lights on for for your wife. They want to be led. They want to have a strong leader, a strong man that sees them, knows them, pursues them. And that would also cause her to, in turn, to desire, connect, and pursue. So I think loneliness is just a thing that we kind of all deal with in marriage at some point. And, you know, the goal is to work toward that we don't. But what do we do in those moments, and how do we get out of that and keep pursuing our spouse and seeing them for who they are? So hopefully that helps. How to make a family culture and values when your spouse isn't into it, as into it as you are. I would say if your spouse just isn't willing to put in the work or doesn't see the benefit of it, maybe the solo idea spouse, I would still pursue it. And then, you know, write down some things that you think fit your family that your husband or your wife would also value. You know them. You should know them at least a little bit, what they value, what they think is important based on how they're instructing the kids or living their life. Write down some of those values, those things that fit, and, you know, just present it to them. See what it is that, see what they have to say about it. See what they... see what they like about what you wrote down, and ask for input, and then ask, you know, just say, hey, I'm gonna move forward with this. I'd like to start talking about this as a family in the car and with the kids, and you know, this is the type of family that we are and who we are and what we want to be. And I think you can institute it, you know, on a level, even if you're doing it solo at first, where it really starts to gain traction with your spouse. But I wouldn't let it go. I would lean into it and do it. I think your kids will really benefit from it, and both you and your spouse. Question, we seem to divide and conquer a lot in life. How do we make this a group sport? You know, when you got multiple kids and lots of things going on during the day, there is a little bit of divide and conquer that happens for sure. I think that you make arrangements in your schedule the best you can to put the family together consistently, maybe not all the time, but certainly consistently. I think it's good to really evaluate the sports and the extracurricular activities and how those impact the rest of the family, and how divided that makes the family or how united that makes the family. So choosing wisely, you know, kind of which kids do what, not that you choose for them, but maybe, you know, give them some options and kind of work your way through the kid list. But you certainly want to have the other siblings cheering on their fellow siblings in different areas, in different ways, because that that's just good for the family. So I would tell this to every family, every couple: reevaluate your family activities and make sure that you're not just doing things to do them, but that they're very intentional and with purpose. And if you're never the mom and dad that says no to the kids and what they want to do, you're always trying to give them what they want, you're not really helping them anyway. So you're going to have to define the time that you want to give up to certain things and the value that it presents, and really make that apply across the family so that you're still getting the family ties, because they'll appreciate the family time as they're older way more than they ever appreciated you being at Little League you know, the 14th volleyball camp of the summer. They're going to remember and rely on the family trips and the togetherness, and that's what they're going to lean into when they get older. How do you get the romance back in your marriage? It feels a lot more like a friendship. Feels a lot more like a friendship recently. You know, I have been there. Cody and I have been there. We have been what feels a lot more like good friends, roommates, and you know, it's nice to have romance in marriage. It's nice to have that connection piece again. I ideologically think people get way ahead of themselves with romance and feel like romance is something that's just 100% always there in marriage. And I can tell you after 20 years of marriage that the romance pieces are really wonderful, but it's not the bulk of marriage. It's a fun piece of it. So if you're wanting to get it back, you're really going to have to make some effort and do some romantic things, some romantic gestures, and plan for it. And, you know, we used to, when we were dating and early on, we made plans to be romantic. We made plans to have a nice dinner or go on a nice walk or time it for sunset or, you know, go away. you know, these kind things that we do for each other that really put in thought and effort to your spouse and what they like and what they need and what they would enjoy. That's the romance piece of it. You're thinking about somebody else. So friends don't friends do think about each other's needs, but they can't meet them in a romantic way because friendship is friendship and romance is different. So obviously if you're going to meet a need, you know, there's something that should include intimacy that brings that romance back. So I guess don't get in your head. Do you think that everything about your marriage is supposed to be romantic all the time? That's just not realistic. But there are wonderful moments of romance in marriage that can be cultivated and found. So to get it back, you're going to have to plan. You're going to have to sit down and make a plan and do something overt and intentional to get your spouse's attention. And you don't always have to surprise them. You can tell them what's coming or him or her what's coming. But I think the effort that you're thinking about them is certainly a romantic gesture. How do you know the Lord is speaking to you? I feel as though I can never quite quiet my mind enough to hear him. Well, I guess it applies to marriage, but certainly more of a spiritual growth type question. The Lord's speaking all the time, truly. And the idea that you don't have to be in some sort of a Zen state to hear from him is just not accurate. The idea is that we turn our attention to him and you know, put the distractions away for whatever length of time we need to hear from the Lord. And he will speak to you. He'll speak to you through the word. He'll speak to you in prayer. He'll speak to you, you know, in and through your thought life a lot. And so, you know, when you're getting ideas or suggestions and he's prompting you, and we backstop those things with the word, does what I feel like he just said to me, does that agree or disagree with what I know to be true in the word of God? And, I think he's speaking to you way more than you realize. So I think that you make an effort to pursue him and go toward him. The word of God is very clear. It says, draw near to him, and he will draw near to us. So I guess how much you want to hear him is really up to you, but he is speaking, and I think we just discount it sometimes because we think it's just our own thoughts when he's really trying to share things with us. So take the time. Your mind doesn't have to be perfectly calm to hear from him. You just need to turn your attention to him and allow him to speak into your life. How to prepare your marriage for a second baby? Great question. First baby was quite a shock to the system. That was all brand new. No instruction manual. And so you're figuring it all out. And of course you have help and grandparents and family and books and people's opinions you never asked for. You have all of that. And just about the time sometimes you start to figure out number one, number two comes along. And preparing your marriage. I think you kind of know what's coming marriage-wise. You know, when you have two little ones to watch after, it adds another dynamic. But it also can help in ways where they, even as they get a little bit older, they kind of help navigate and teach each other and occupy each other. But you kind of know what's coming marriage-wise. There's going to be some downtime with the intimacy after a baby comes. You know, a little lack of sleep there at the beginning. Of course, Cody and I always recommend a book called Baby Wise that is a fantastic book written by a Christian author. And just talking about scheduling for your kids and really developing them into strong and secure individuals, human beings, children. And that can really help with your marriage life when your kids are on good schedules and their temperaments reflect how well you're parenting and how well you're leading them using some of the principles from that book. But that's some of the best preparation I can tell you about having a second baby. But, you know, find some help if you can, anywhere that you can, to watch the kids for short windows of time and to get away from the messes and the stinkiness and all the things that happen when you have children, and spend some time together. And I think if you make plans for that, it'll help you with number two, and you'll find that it's a little bit easier when number two comes along. Another question, my spouse is drinking too much. How can I bring it up? I think marriage is best when you're direct. So if you have a problem with your spouse's use of alcohol or drugs or entertainment, video games, any type of an addiction, I think you just got to be direct. And, you know, anytime you're going to confront your spouse, you want to try to avoid you statements. You do this and you do that. I think that sometimes when we approach those, most of the time we approach those, we need to express how their decisions are affecting us and affecting how we feel and how we're navigating life. And I think it comes across a little bit better that, you know, in general, that spouses, you know, they don't want to hurt each other. Certainly not intentionally. Obviously, there's different scenarios where that's the case, where maybe intentionality or intentional abuse is the case. But, you know, just for the sake of looking at this particular question, I think you just got to approach it, man. This is just not a good path. This doesn't bode well for a relationship. This isn't a good reflection on our children or a good example. These paths of destructive behaviors and addictions can lead to much steeper trouble in relationships and truly with the law. You know, a DUI is an expensive proposition for a family, and just not being able to make sound decisions when you've taken yourself, you know, to a place where you're not in control. And so I think you got to approach it in a way that really kind of lays out the pitfalls of what you see and that you want to help in any way that you can and see the best out of your spouse and, you know, try to have a conversation starting there and work from that place. But you certainly can't avoid it. You should speak to it and you should do it soon. How to practically show that you're always on the same team. The way I'm reading this question, I'm hoping I understand it correctly, is what are some practical ways that you can acknowledge with your spouse that you guys are working together and on the same team? I think that, I think of a kid example. You know, wives don't want to be the sole disciplinarian. They want their husbands to lean in. I think my wife finds me, in some ways, the most attractive when I jump into a situation she's having with the kids because it's not going well, or they're not saying they're not treating her right, or saying things that are honoring or respectful to her. And when I jump into that and step in as the lead or as the head, she appreciates that. She's expressed that to me. So being on the same page together when you're raising kids is a big deal. And your kids need to see a united front. You don't want to undermine or necessarily even specifically disagree with how the other one is handling the kids in front of the kids. I think you back each other up. You honor that relationship. And then on the side, maybe out of sight, out of hearing, you address, hey, I would have maybe handled that differently. I don't think that was a good path to go. But your kids do need to see a united front when you're disciplined and training. And move forward from there. But you know, also just being on the same team. I think that's a communication piece. You know, the acknowledging that, hey, we're still working toward these goals we've written down, prayed over. You know, things that we know we're working toward. To acknowledge and communicate about those things on a regular basis. That the things that we're doing are intentional, and we're still on track, on path to fulfill the things that we're working together toward. It's going to take, you know, quite a bit of communication. So hopefully that helps. How to discern when protectiveness bridges into being controlling. At some point, a spouse should be vulnerable to being, it says at some point a spouse could be vulnerable to being taken advantage of. Healthy marriages, you know, we talked a little bit about this at the marriage conference. You know, this leading and protective nature, like Boaz was for Ruth, is certainly something that husbands should lean into. You know, you're right. There are men that are controlling, that they don't want their wives communicating with other people and out and about, and you know, that none of that is godly. So obviously, we weren't addressing a specific situation like that, but I think that I think that you just have to pay attention. I think our world assigns controlling and uses that terminology to anybody that's asking questions or knows your whereabouts. And you know, people get, I guess, uptight about being accountable to someone else. And that's what marriage is. You are accountable. You on either side of the spectrum, whether you're a husband or a wife, you're accountable to your spouse. And that means they can look at your phone. They can cruise through your messages. They can look at your emails, your browsing history. They should be able to pick up your phone without any hassle and be able to see what and where you've been. And, you know, we have family tracking apps with the different carriers and providers that we know where our kids are and our spouse is. I don't have any problem with that. I mean, if you're living above board, there's no reason for you to be worried about your spouse knowing where you're at. But when it comes to, you know, the controlling aspect of it, obviously that's a conversation you're going to have with your spouse that, that if it's hindering you from doing the things you need to do, being able to live life and manage the household, or husbands needing to, you know, go to work and you know, do the things that you need to do without feeling like you're going to be under some sort of scrutiny all the time. That's a conversation you're going to have to bring up and hash some things out. I know that there are certainly situations where spouses could be vulnerable to be taken advantage of, but you certainly have to, you know, just look at that whole situation and even bring in some help, somebody that you trust to ask, you know, what they thought, about what was going on. But, you know, you don't have to put yourself into a vulnerable position where you are being taken advantage of. I think that there's a line there where you can tell and ask for help and move from there. So it's kind of hard to give you a really clear answer without having specifics, because it could certainly be case by case. But there are situations truly where there's controlling situations, and those need to be addressed by probably some outside help and somebody that loves you and cares about you both that can speak into your lives. How can we foster sex being for both spouses to make it more for the man, in our language, could impact how spouses prioritize their wives' pleasure? Absolutely, yeah. Sex is not all about the man, for sure. The reason why it seems like that in some discussions is because men connect on the physical piece as a majority, not completely, but as a majority of men. They connect on the physical piece, and then women connect on the emotional piece and the conversation, the communication piece. So that's why it comes across that way when you start talking about sex, the need for men. But that being said, women very much have a need and a desire for sex and should be satisfied and fulfilled. And if that's not part of the priority of the intimacy between the husband and wife, then that's a conversation that needs to happen, because it's important for both and it's beneficial for both. So you cannot prioritize one's experience over the other, not on a consistent basis. I think there's times and seasons. Now, I wouldn't even say seasons. I would say there's moments, maybe experiences throughout the month where one or the other might get more intimacy than the other, and that's certainly a thing that happens based on health, tiredness, all kinds of different things. But it cannot be a regular thing. If it's one-sided, that will produce resentment. So whichever side you're on, you need to make an effort to balance out the consistency of you both receiving the intimacy, both receiving that piece of sex, what leads to, you know, climax and you know, kind of finishing that intimacy and that connection. And so you got to talk about that and work on that together, because that cannot be one-sided. That would be unfair, and I don't think that's right. And so certainly the priority needs to be on both the husband and the wife. So fellas, you need to make sure that if she's taking care of you, it needs to work both ways. And make sure it's a priority, because she deserves it. She will appreciate it. So make it a priority. Last question. When you say not to take advice of worldly marriage books, what themes do you see as harmful? Lots of themes are harmful. Any worldly marriage book that says you should use pornography to spice up your marriage is a terrible advice. Any marriage advice that says bring a third party into your marriage is a marriage bed is terrible advice. Any marriage advice that tells you to separate, get away from each other for a time, so that you can get clear-headed and figure things out when you're not dealing specifically with maybe abuse or things like that, where they're recommending you take time apart, is terrible advice. There are marriage people that are psychologists that have a completely secular viewpoint of how marriage is, and that it is not a covenant, that it is an agreement or a contract that can be broken or rewritten or cast aside. And I don't like taking advice from anybody that has that opinion of marriage at all. I like taking advice from marriages that have weathered storms, have experience in their backpack, they have notches in their belt of going through some things, have some longevity to it, and they have godly biblical wisdom. And I don't think from a marriage standpoint we have any place in receiving wisdom of the world. The Bible says the wisdom of the world is foolishness. And I think all wisdom stems from and starts with God and His Word and what He's already said to us. And the people that have gleaned these creative and wonderful marriage ideas and wisdom over the years and have put those in book and seminar form that lean into the scriptures, those are the people that we should spend our time on and get a lot of value out of it. So, there are some very interesting themes in the world, but I don't see them producing any fruit. So why not go with the ones that honor God and put Him first? So the follow-up to that is, which Christian marriage books do you look to instead? We like a lot of the stuff from Les and Leslie Perot. They wrote the Symbis curriculum. They're fantastic. Focus on the Family's got quite a bit of good marriage stuff. And one of the books that Cody's reading that we picked up not too long ago that's really been beneficial for the ladies, on the ladies' side, certainly for both husband and wife, but certainly geared toward women, is called Intimate Issues. And I'd be remiss right now to tell you the author, but you should be able to find that. Intimate Issues is a good book on intimacy for marriage. And there's a bunch of others, but I would I like to go to the people that I know, the people that I listen to, that I trust, that I'm listening to, teach and preach the Word of God, and a lot of those places will make recommendations, things they've read and people that they know personally that have good solid marriages and a history of good marriage advice, and so I like to go to those people to look to see what they're recommending for marriage books. Because there is some truly terrible, truly awful advice. Another thing I'm thinking of is, just some of this marriage advice of wives, if your husband isn't treating you right, or you don't like, what he's doing, you can stop doing things for him. Stop intimacy, stop making meals, stop doing the things that you do. Husbands, same advice. If your wife isn't taking care of herself like you like, just cut her off from certain things. It's terrible advice. That's what junior high kids do. They treat you poorly until you figure out that you're being a knothead, and then the peer pressure hopefully steers you in the right direction. And that's not how adults or Christians or mature human beings operate. We communicate with each other when we don't like what's happening. So that's why I steer away from terrible worldly marriage advice. And, maybe you could pick up a nugget or two, but anything that's good in the world has been taken from and adapted in some way, shape, or form from the Word of God. And so why not just stay with people that already acknowledge Jesus and the Lord and work with them? So that wraps up the questions. Hopefully that helped a little bit. Cody, sorry she couldn't be here. We're wrapping up some school stuff this week with the girls, but wanted to get this out to you soon. And hopefully you got a lot out of the conference and something out of these questions. And we love you much. We'll see you soon.